What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. All right, so from one war zone to the next, we go to Uptown Charlotte. Over the weekend, four people shot and hospitalized after a man fired a barrage of bullets during an argument near Uptown. I would not call this near Uptown. It was the 600 block of North Tryon Street. That is clearly Uptown. Okay, so for people who aren't aware of Uptown, downtown Charlotte, which, by the way, when are we going to get a downtown? Can we get a downtown? I feel like that's where the police department is. Can we call that part downtown? Is it gotten so, has Uptown Charlotte gotten so large that now we can call part of it downtown? So this way we can say they made the arrest and they're taking them downtown. Well, I mean, that would indicate that there are arrests being made, and that's, I kid. CMPD actually does make the arrests. It's the courts that turn everybody loose. So four people shot and hospitalized after somebody just started shooting. I believe this was outside of a club, 600 block of Tryon Street. So you got Trade and Tryon. Those are the main, that's the cross streets right in the center of Center City, Trade and Tryon. And as you move away from that Center City point, you've got like Tryon runs north to south. So now it becomes North Tryon as you go, exactly, as you go north. So the 100 block, 200 block, 300 block, and so on. So six blocks. That's where 600 North Tryon Street. That block is six blocks away from the square where the banks are headquartered, right? Taste of Charlotte was just held. And so there was, this occurred at 2 a.m. early Saturday morning, six blocks away. It was in the parking lot of a business that police did not identify. Police urged anybody with information about the shooting to call Crime Stoppers. This is an anonymous tip line, 704-334-1600. Or not, just let the people who engage in this kind of criminal behavior, just let them continue to roam free in the neighborhood, and I'm sure they totally won't ever kill you or somebody you love. By the way, they ever catch the person that shot everybody at the... Was it the July 4th or Juneteenth celebration, or what was that a couple of years ago? It's been like 4 years. Never did catch that person. Out in California, Alameda County DA Pamela Price, she announced that she had cut plea deals to drop the murder charges for two of three men accused of killing a man who was found strangled to death on the side of the road back in 2021. Pamela Price, one of these DAs that is a little soft on the criminals, and so she's going to drop the murder charges. Price said that the deals reflected that the men had, quote, accepted responsibility for their actions in the home invasion, robbery, kidnapping, and murder of Benjamin Hemman, 34 years old, whose body was discovered in the Oakland Hills, bound, gagged, and strangled to death. But they've admitted culpability. They've accepted responsibility. So, 45-year-old Richard Ontiveros pleaded guilty to second-degree murder, which could carry a sentence of 15 years to life in prison. They say he confessed to strangling the 34-year-old with a dog leash after they had kidnapped him and drove him around the East Bay. Kevin Woodruff, 36. He pleaded guilty to home invasion, robbery, and possession of stolen property. He could get 6 years in prison. Brian Wu, 34 years old, pleaded guilty to residential burglary. That carries a sentence of 6 years in prison. So there you go. You got the one guy, I guess, and he did the murdering, and the other two, they were just along for the burglary, for the home invasion and the robbery and the burglary and all of that. And oh my gosh, somebody died. Now, back when I was growing up, if you were part of that kind of a criminal act and somebody died while you were committing the criminal act, you got charged with the murder too. That's how that used to happen. But I guess not in Alameda County with the district attorney, Pamela Price. Prosecutors are still pursuing a case against another person, Marshawna Whittle. Marshawna Whittle. She was charged with residential burglary as well as identity theft in connection with Hemmons' death. But she had initially implicated her husband. Don't know which one her husband is, but then she recanted. She retracted those accusations. So I'm not sure if there was some sort of trouble in paradise, domestic issue going on. And she's like, well, he killed somebody. And then, like, no, I love him again. You know, maybe something like that. I don't know. He may be a murderer, but he's my murderer. This DA is set to face a recall vote later this year. She has drawn criticism. This may come as a shock, so you may want to sit down. She has drawn criticism for granting plea deals in the past. Her critics, including prosecutors who have resigned since her election, say that she has prioritized defendants over victims. Last year, she actually tried to disqualify a judge because the judge rejected her plea deal for an alleged triple murderer. She tried to offer a triple murderer a plea agreement, and the judge was like, no. And so she tried to get him disqualified from the case. Up in Washington, D.C., I don't know if you saw this story over the weekend. Some, I think, 20-year-old female stole a car outside a hospital. Carjacking. Although, as I understand it, there was no weapon used in the commission of the carjacking. A woman goes and picks up her sister at the hospital. And so the sister is in a wheelchair. She's disabled. And so she had just come out of the hospital, I guess. So she goes around to help her get out of the wheelchair, get into the car. She then takes the wheelchair back into the wheelchair corral or the lobby area. And as she brings the wheelchair back, this person jumps in the car, steals the car with the 55-year-old disabled woman in the passenger seat. She then crashes the car and kills the woman and flees. But a cop in D.C., a Metro police officer, saw the accident and saw the person fleeing, so arrested the person. And the DA dropped the charges this weekend. This is fine, I'm sure. This is all fine, right? This is not indicative of a breakdown in society by agents of destabilization trying to sow chaos in our society so as to then provide the, quote, solution, right, from the same laboratory which they created the problem. At the federal level, have you heard what's going on in Texas? There's a Texas-based general surgeon who exposed the Houston Children's Hospital for doing child transgender surgeries. And at first blush, you might think, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, if a 11-year-old wants to castrate himself, what's the problem with that, Pete? Well, that's a good question. Slight problem here, aside from the fact that they're 11 years old. But it's banned. Texas banned this. And the hospital is like, we're totally not doing this stuff anymore. And then they kept doing it. And so the surgeon who blew the whistle has now been charged by the Biden DOJ. TheFederalist.com, piece by Jordan Boyd. A Texas-based general surgeon who exposed his Houston Children's Hospital for secretly continuing a child transgender mutilation program now faces 4 felony counts from President Joe Biden's Department of Justice for speaking out about it. Shortly after Texas Governor Greg Abbott ordered his state's Department of Family and Protective Services to investigate the transing of children as abuse in 2022, Texas Children's Hospital the largest children's hospital in America, claimed that it would no longer offer chemical castration and other body butchering services to pediatric patients. By the way, just as an aside here, there isn't any other mental condition, and I'm not saying that as a pejorative, I'm just saying, like, this is obviously in the brain, right? That's what I mean. So brain condition, there's no other condition that psychiatrists treat with affirmation. You don't tell people when they have a misguided or false or dysphoric view of themselves, or everybody's out to get me, I'm paranoid, whatever. Like, you ask them questions and you kind of dig deeper to find out, like, the source of these problems. You don't say, oh, yeah, you're right, the black helicopters are out to get you, even though I will note that the helicopters are black. But they, no, they do not affirm these things in people, except this one particular case, because this is part of the religion. As 33-year-old whistleblower Dr. Ethan Haim soon discovered, at least three Texas Children's physicians were actually continuing to castrate children as young as 11 years old after the program was allegedly halted. The hospital also promoted procedures to cut off the breasts and the genitals of physically healthy people. A report, which this doctor claims to have sourced, the report came from City Journal. Christopher Rufo detailed the findings. And from what I understand, Haim was the one, this doctor was the one who got the proof from the hospital. But he had, or they had, you know, taken out the identifying information. But in order to prove this thing is occurring, he showed them documentation. Around that same time, in May of 2023, the Texas legislature passed a law banning gender experimentation on minors. So this is clearly illegal at this point. And you still have doctors at the children's hospital doing this to kids. Okay. 1 month later, federal agents made a, quote, highly atypical, unexpected, and aggressive show of force at Haim's apartment door. His name is Ethan Haim, H-A-I-M. Could be Haim or Haim. I don't know. They announced in a letter signed by U.S. Attorney Tina Ansari of the Southern District of Texas that he was being investigated over his presumed role in the leak of medical records. He's got a 4-felony count indictment for violating HIPAA. He has set up a Give, Send, Go account, which is like it's a crowdsourcing fundraising platform, like a GoFundMe, but it's called Give, Send, Go, because GoFundMe's, you know, leftist. Anyway, and they keep people from being able to fundraise certain things that they don't like that, you know, go counter to the religion. And he says he does not regret making Texas Children's actions public, but admitted that it has cost him the entirety of his retirement, investment savings, and almost all of his family's disposable income to pay the legal bills in order to keep the case alive. And Jordan Boyd at the Federalist says, if a Texas surgeon who rightfully blew the whistle on a child mutilation program his state outlawed can face politically charged prosecution and persecution laden with misconduct simply because the Biden administration wants to make a point about people who oppose its radical transgender agenda, well, then nobody is safe. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra confirmed this too when he admitted during a congressional hearing last month that the Biden administration planned to defund hospitals that had religious objections to transgender mutilation. Recognize where we are. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action.
go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out?
I had a couple other messages here. Let me just dip into some of the massages. Kelly says, the business in Uptown where the shooting happened is the A1 Lounge, where I hear they have fantastic steak sauce. She says it's directly across the street from two high-rise apartments. We faced Tryon Street and heard the shots, guessing 40-plus shots. I can't tell you how many times we have called to complain about the noise. Unfortunately, this happening was not a surprise. They're back and were open for business Sunday night. So that is the Uptown shooting that occurred over the weekend. This is from The Hellion. All kinds of hell. Well, that is on brand for The Hellion. All kinds of hell need to be raised if Hunter Biden serves no time. He needs to be penalized something that he can't buy, and that's time. And regarding the last hour's topic, regarding the successful Israeli rescue operation, Russ said, jihad of victory or martyrdom. That's what they were had on the banner out in front of the White House protesting. He says, I saw a tweet arguing that this is no different than Patrick Henry saying, give me liberty or give me death. Yeah, that's the same thing.
That's right.
We get to kill everybody or we die. Your terms are acceptable. I will take option B. As long as you're giving me the choice, right? All right, let's go back up to Manhattan Marsupial Court and the judge that runs the show up there, Judge Juan Merchan. He sent a notification to Donald Trump's attorney, whose name is Todd Blanche, and told the attorney, told Todd, that they'd come across a comment submitted onto the court's Facebook page. Did you know the court has a Facebook page? I was not aware of this. By the way, Facebook is using all of your stuff to train its AI. Just a heads up on that. Okay. All of your old stuff, everything. They're just, taking it all. Okay. So there was a comment that was submitted to the court's Facebook page claiming to be from somebody who had a cousin on the jury. Okay. This person's name, the cousin, is named Michael Anderson. Don't know what the juror's name is, but the person who made the post is named Michael Anderson. Michael Anderson, self-proclaimed cousin to a juror who said on the Facebook page, the court's Facebook page, that the verdict had already been decided and Trump was guilty. Oh, yeah, sorry, this was before the verdict came down. I'm sure this is not a problem at all. Well, obviously it's a problem, because even the judge had to tell the lawyers, hey, heads up, there's this thing that happened. The Facebook post in question was reportedly submitted by somebody going by the name of Michael Anderson. Now, the post no longer exists. He either deleted it himself, or maybe a moderator took it down. Don't know. But the court does have the names of the jurors, and they could check to see if any of them really do have a cousin named Michael Anderson. And maybe they run into some problems because it's a common name, right? I don't know. But what if they do find a match? Unless the juror is willing to confess to blabbing about the trial to their relatives, it doesn't seem as if there would be much to be done in terms of any kind of corrective action here, right? They just say, oh, I didn't say that. I didn't tell them that. Jazz Shaw, writing at hotair.com, says it is against the rules for jurors to discuss the trial with others before it ended. But it's apparently not technically a law. It's just an order from the judge. In other words, you're definitely told not to do it, But nobody's going to arrest you if you do. And that brings us back to what this news might mean for Donald Trump, if the story is confirmed to be true. Unfortunately, the answer appears to be nothing. Right? So keep in mind, the time period when this communication between the juror and their cousin could have taken place would have been well after the prosecution and the defense had both rested and after the closing arguments had been made. So at that point, their part in the trial was over, right? So now it's just in the jury's hands. The communication would have needed to have taken place after they reached their 34 unanimous verdicts, but before they were read out in the courtroom, right? I mean, that's if you base this on, like, you know, a cousin on the jury is like, oh yeah, we're convicted him. He's convicted. And then Michael Anderson races over to Facebook to post it. I got some information. My cousin's on the jury. He's guilty. Right. And then they come out and deliver the verdict. So a very small window, which also, how would the juror even be able to send the message or get the information to the cousin in that brief window of time because they had their cell phones taken, right? So how would they have communicated this? I don't know. Unless, of course, and I'm just spitballing here because I don't know, that I'm sure they're going to do a full-blown investigation to find out. But there is another possibility here, which is that the jury had actually had these discussions prior to the point where they were supposed to and only allowed to have those discussions, right? They may have been back in that jury room in the chambers and been talking, and they all were like, yeah, he's guilty. And everybody was in agreement. And they haven't even done the closing arguments yet. That's possible, right? I'm sure Juan Merchan's all over it. I'm sure he's going to do a thorough investigation. He's got his best men looking into it. Who? Top men. Top. To quote the documentary Raiders of the Lost Ark. We have an election tomorrow in South Carolina. Did you know that? Well, not all of South Carolina. Well, I mean, yeah, primaries. We got primary elections in South Carolina, and there are two races that people are watching. One is a little bit more up in the air than the other. So we got five House primaries to watch tomorrow, according to the Washington Examiner, from Nevada to South Kakalaka. All right, we got Representative Nancy Mace in South Carolina. She's facing a tough primary challenge tomorrow, making her the first of the eight Republicans who voted to oust former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to fight for her reelection while the former GOP leader actively works against her. So I was not even aware, but apparently McCarthy is into that race down there. Mace is going to compete against Catherine Templeton for the GOP nomination for South Carolina's first congressional district. The race has garnered widespread attention, with Mace facing opposition from some members of her own party, including McCarthy, who has set out on a revenge tour of sorts. Can we get T-shirts? Kevin McCarthy's Revenge Tour 2024. Mace is among the most vulnerable of McCarthy's detractors, as the other five running for re-election face their primary challengers. McCarthy has criticized Mace heading into the primary election, attacking the incumbent over her voting record and the recent turnover in her office. Apparently, this has been a problem for Nancy Mace. People keep quitting. Her staffers keep leaving, and they've been telling some anecdotes that are not exactly flattering, right? Apparently, she really likes, according to the stories I have seen, and I'm not here to gossip, I'm just saying this is what's been put out there into the media, so you know it's true, she really does like talking about her dating life. With her staffers. She likes talking about all of the relations and such. And they're not very comfortable with those types of conversations. But Templeton, her challenger, has seized on Mace's vote because she is a Republican. This is a Republican primary, and that is what Republicans do. They pounce or they seize, sometimes both. She has seized on Mace's vote to oust McCarthy, using it to accuse the South Carolina Republican of being disloyal to her party. South Carolina voters will also have the opportunity to choose their favored candidate to replace Representative Jeff Duncan, who announced earlier this year that he would not run for an eighth term in Congress. Duncan's retirement leaves the seat open for the first time in over a decade, attracting a crowded primary field of seven Republican candidates. Whoever wins the primary is favored to win in November because the district is like super Republican. It's like an R plus 21. Very, very Republican. But downside with all the candidates is that you have so many people in the field that the chances that one of them clear the 50% threshold is lower. And so you're probably going to end up with a runoff of some kind. So those are the two big South Carolina races people are watching around the country. Also, you've got up in Maine, I should say, the second district in Maine. Wow, way to bury the headline there. Maine's got two seats? Wow, that's impressive. I thought they just had one. Maybe they've got more than two. I don't know. It just seems like a small state. Jared Golden, he's a Democrat. And he has held the seat, though, despite his district going for Trump in the past. So we'll see. But among those running against him are a state representative, Austin Theriault. He's a former NASCAR driver. Any of you guys NASCAR heads, NASCAR fans, do you know who this is? Austin Theriault. I don't know. He has an endorsement from Donald Trump, and as well as the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. He's going to face off against State Representative Michael Sobolewski, who is being badly out-fundraised by the NASCAR driver, former NASCAR driver. And then we go out to Nevada, where Republicans will head to the polls to pick their candidate to challenge Representative Susie Lee. She's a Democrat. That primary has attracted a crowded field also. Seven different candidates trying to unseat her in the November election. This is one of the most competitive races of the cycle. It's rated as a D plus one district, so that is winnable for Republicans. So we'll see. Last week, I gave you updates on that. I know I'm hitting a lot of topics here, but there's just so much. There's so many things going on. I gotta cover it all. Last week, I talked about the hate donuts, right? The burnouts on the pride paintings, on the rainbow paintings on the asphalt at the intersections, right? Cities have gone around and they've been painting the rainbow, the pride flags in the intersections. And then people have been driving their vehicles over them and doing donuts in the street takeovers. They've been doing the burnouts and peel outs and slamming on the brakes and wheelies and all sorts of stuff and laying track marks, tire marks on the flags. And in fact, in Florida, there's some ridiculous laws that allowed some of these drivers to be charged with felonies. Delray Beach is where this occurred, and people were so outraged over it. And then they had like some big rededication. They repainted the thing, and then they were like, you know, hey, we repainted it, rededicate this, you know, just like road markings. And as reporters are packing up and leaving, a couple of teenagers come by on those rental scooters, you know, the electric scooters that you put, you know, your credit card into and then you can tool around the city and stuff. And they were doing wheelies on it, trying to lay rubber onto the right there. And it's on camera. Oh, my goodness. Oh, BMW admitting the obvious. They got challenged the other day on Twitter to explain why their logo is all rainbowy in Western countries, but not in the Middle East. What's the deal with that? They answered honestly. They said, quote, we don't do that because Muslims as a group, well, they didn't say this isn't a quote. This is from David Strom at Hot Air. He says, we don't do that because Muslims as a group in the Middle East don't think so highly of the gays and other sexual minorities. So Yeah, they don't want to do any kind of brand damage or incentivize any raging mob of mostly peaceful Islamists to go and murder car salesmen at the BMW stores, right? So that's why. So apparently they feel totally comfortable doing that in America, where as a society, the values are different, right? So there you go. That's BMW. And they're not the only one. Corporations all over the place are doing this, too. You look at their Middle Eastern sectors, and none of them got the rainbow flag.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them, too, and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.